episode 13 of Role Play Grow, the podcast for tabletop entrepreneurs, creators, and fans. I am Courtney Stover of Lightheart Adventures, and in this podcast, we talk to the creators behind the brands and the tabletop roleplay gaming space about who they are and how they are turning their passion for gaming into a career. I have been looking forward to today's interview for so long. Last fall, we funded a Kickstarter that was wildly successful for a little game called Wander Home, and I actually did a blog interview with the two people spearheading the project. I will link that blog post down in the show notes, and if you want to learn more about the game itself and kind of the processes that they use to develop it, and I highly recommend that you go check that post out. Today, I got to talk to those same two wonderful people, Jay Dragon and Ruby Lavin, about so many things. We talked about all of the logistics of running such a successful Kickstarter, everything that they've been doing since the campaign ended, like setting up Possum Creek Games as an LLC, all the logistics they've had to manage with artists and layout and printers, merch fulfillment, setting up an online store. Y'all, there is such a goldmine of information in this episode. And also, they're just really fun. I know that y'all are going to love learning from the two of them. The episode is a bit longer than what I normally strive for, but it was just such a good conversation that I couldn't cut it off early, and I honestly could have kept talking to them for hours. I would not be surprised if we have a sequel within the next couple of months. We kind of talk a little bit about what that subject will be in the interview. Before we jump into today's episode, though, just a little bit of business. So if you are newer to the show, we do have a Patreon for both Lightheart Adventures and Roleplay Go. So Roleplay Go is the interview side of things, but over at our website, lightheartadventures.com, you'll find that we also do things like free monthly one-shots for D&D and other type of tabletop games. And we make a lot of battle maps and world maps. We do commissions. We sell some on an online store. But if you go to our Patreon, then you'll find more of those maps, adventures, all of the free monthly side quests that we do on a monthly basis. We also offer to our patrons in a PDF format, not just the blog form. And you get additional versions of the maps within that as well. If you are more a fan of the podcast and not as much for the maps and adventures, then I've got a couple different perks, depending on the tier that you do for this podcast. So everything like contributing questions to my upcoming guests. I've got kind of a little bit of a secret podcast going on the back end for some business tips on just things that we've tried and that are working. And also the potential for a spotlight on an episode of Roleplay Girl. Check it out. See what you like. If Patreon is not your jam, then you can also support the show by subscribing, sharing with your friends, and leaving a review. Reviews are super important for the show to be able to grow and for people to find us. So if you have been hanging around and you like what you're hearing, please drop me a review on your podcast platform of choice. Lastly, the affiliate that I would like to spotlight today is Friday Afternoon Tea. Honestly, tea is pretty much the perfect beverage to drink while you're playing Wander Home, so you need to go get yourself some tea from Friday. She runs an amazing tea shop making delicious blends based off your favorite nerdy characters from fandoms all over the spectrum. Go to fridaytea.com, use code LIGHTHEARTADV at checkout, and you'll receive 10% off your order and help support this show. All right, let's go talk to two of my favorite people. Just say how incredibly excited I am right now that it is time to introduce y'all to the lovely masterminds behind Possum Creek Games. We have Jay Dragon, creative director and founder, and Ruby Lavin, art director and graphic designer. Ruby, did I just pronounce your last name right?
It's Lavin, but you know, who cares?
You got my last name fine now.
Shut up.
Great start. Well, Ruby Lavin, art director and graphic designer, how are y'all today?
We're doing great. This interview is being recorded like a few hours after we launched the PDF copy of Wander Home. So We're both doing great.
We're just running on so many endorphins.
Yeah. And sushi.
And sushi.
And lunchtime sushi.
Yeah.
Those are the best things to be running on, though. So, I mean, congratulations. And thank you again for agreeing to let me interview you on a day that you should probably just go sleep.
That's for... that'll be after I send this whole thing to the printer. So honestly,
yeah, I was gonna say there's this the thing about the PDF release is that like it's sort of the big moment public facing, but like on our end, it's like
kind of little, yeah,
yeah, comparatively. Like, you know, like if we didn't have any customers, it wouldn't matter at all.
Exactly.
I guess that's true for all of the things
for literally everything I do every day.
Yeah, but it feels more true. Like, 'cause it's like with the print release, it's like. The big moment for the print release isn't when, like, you ship out the books necessarily. It kind of happens a little more piecemeal.
Yeah.
Whereas in the PDF release, it's like you hit a button.
And everyone gets it.
Yeah. And exactly. It feels very dramatic on, like, the customer side. But on our side, we hit a button and then went back to laying out the document.
Yeah.
But we ate sushi.
What kind of sushi?
There's a place in town that opened at 11:30. So at 11:30 in the morning, we called them and asked if you can order the sushi dinner in the morning. And they were like, sushi dinner at 11:30? Yes, of course. And we were like, great, let's have two of them. So I don't know, whatever's in the assortment.
Yes. You know, just whatever was there.
You know, the dinner special for the morning.
We're doing great. Thank you for asking.
I love it. So I want to go ahead and just kind of kick off this discussion with something that I've already asked you in a blog interview, but that was a while ago, and not everybody reads all of the wonders that we publish. So mm-hmm. I would love to start with just hearing about how y'all met.
Okay, so we both grew up going to a summer camp around here where we live in the Hudson Valley called the Wayfinder Experience. And I'm like 3 years older than Jamie. So in summer camp terms, that's like an entire era.
Yeah. Yeah.
So honestly, who's to say like when we met, like,
I do think the first time we met was Finale 2009.
Right. But I don't have memories of Finale 2009 there, because again, you were a child and I was like a cool, whatever.
Yes. SIT teenager. Yeah.
Yeah.
We met at some point along the lines of me being probably like a camper SIT and you being a young staff.
Yeah.
We didn't, like, get to know each other that well because, like, Grubby is very scary and like intimidating and awesome in a way that I was just like, I'm a 15-year-old who, yeah. If I look in someone's eyes for too long, I want to die. I can't talk to her. But we became friends because we got elected to the same board. In summer camp administration.
We choose the games that are going to, or we help choose the games that are going to be run every summer, the LARP mm-hmm. games.
And so we got to get to know each other there. And we one night got very drunk and read every single game that had ever been submitted to the company. And I feel like before that moment, like, yeah, like, you know, we went to the same college. We like had run into each other, but I feel like that was the moment where we actually became friends.
Yeah. We got elected to the board at the same time when there were already other people on it. And we were like, this is terrible. By our own force of will, we will fix the entire thing. And we're going to start by making a lot of spreadsheets and reading every document on this entire shared Google Drive, which is really, it's just like,
that's just how we have done it forever.
Exactly. Like, it was really like an illustration of how we work in the same way. We're both crazy in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about this LARP camp. Like, what was the LARP?
Oh my God.
The Wayfinder Experience is a summer camp where basically it's like every single week you put on a like an enormous ad hoc LARP production with like 60 plus campers and a full team and a production budget. And then you tear it all down by the end of the week and you never talk about it again.
Yeah. We don't run like a specific storyline.
Yeah. Cause it's literally it's a completely different thing every single week. And so
sometimes like 3 times a week.
Yeah. Sometimes 3 times a week. Grubby was in charge of sets and props mainly. Like, she also did story, but like,
yeah, you know, I mainly
build
do
the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was the one who wrote a lot of the stories, a lot of the LARPs.
Yep.
And so I got used to her telling me that my ideas were really bad.
You got used to my murder threats really early.
Yep.
Yeah. Wayfinder is, like, because it's a summer camp, like, you have all the expenses of a camp and then also, like, all the expenses and logistics of running a LARP. And so the LARPs are kind of, like, really janky. We were talking about this last night with Jay's roommate, how, like, everything you make to you is, like, really impressive and beautiful because you, like, can see what it's mm-hmm. supposed to be. But to someone else looking at it, it's, like, a vuvuzela covered in, like, ethafoam or, like... Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, anytime my mom was at a yard sale and she saw lacrosse armor, she would buy as much of it as possible because that's the best LARP armor for, like, mm-hmm. cheap. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of, like, cardboard and spray paint and, like, slapdash stuff and, like, kids wearing jeans under their tunic made of cotton or whatever.
And now we're at the point where, I don't know, I feel like Possum Creek is, like, the natural evolution where it's, like, we spent so long learning how to fight with training weights on, and then finally we got to take the training weights off.
Yeah, like, oh, now we can afford to, like, we can afford anything.
My husband and I used to do, like, a medieval combat LARP, so that's something that I could just, yeah, we could just talk about that for the next hour, but...
we really could. I've spent years of my life just sitting here talking about LARPing.
Good times. I miss it. Okay, well, I'm supposed to have, you know, a business podcast, so I probably shouldn't just go down this rabbit hole, even though I really want to.
Talk about foam and all that.
We could definitely talk about the best type of foam, the best, like, resources for foam. But anyways.
Yard sale scavenging. If you see a couch on the side of the road, you can just strip it for foam.
You should, in fact.
And you should.
A couple years ago, my dad brought home an entire, like, a mattress made entirely of foam, like a mattress pad. And I turned it into a bear costume. And he was like, that's a really, like, you could have used that as a mattress. And I was like, but I need bear arms. You don't understand. But he does, because I've been doing this since 2004. Sometimes I'll come home from camp, like a day camp, just like full, like, cyborg evil empress makeup. And my dad will be like, did you eat? Are you hungry?
Rolling up into the diner like at 3 a.m. in demon makeup. But yeah, yeah. Business.
He understands the priorities.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Okay, so you met at LARP camp, and then eventually you got into writing games and publishing and art. So how did that transition go?
It kind of happened a little ad hoc, where it was for Sleepaway, I needed a layout person, and I needed an artist for some of the aspects of it. And I, like, talked to you, and, like, you kind of came on board. And we worked really well together, and there was a lot that I would not have been able to accomplish without you. And so when Wanderhome came along, it was like...
I think the way that Jamie hired me was, she messaged me one day and was like, hey, can I hire you for Wanderhome to just do, like, everything? And I was like, are you asking me if you can pay me money to always respond to your text messages? Which is kind of how it is.
I remember there was a moment, I think a couple weeks before the Kickstarter, where it was like, we just kind of, like, we'd been like we'd been jokingly calling each other business partners.
Yes.
And then it was kind of just like, I just finally was like, hey, so you're actually my business partner, right? And you were like, yes. And I was like, good. Kinda thank, like, God.
Like when you start dating. But
yeah. Yeah, we had the talking phase, but for being business partners. But, like, by the launch of Wanderhome, it was like we were running the business together. And then, like, after all the aftermath and all the navigating everything.
It has been totally split evenly.
Yeah, yeah.
Most times. Yeah, I mean, I was always going to be, like, I'm always going to be Jamie's graphic designer, even if I, whatever, with whatever changes. Mm-hmm. But for this, like, we were doing the layout, and because of the way that Possum Creek works and the way that Jay's brain works, like, the layout and the art direction was always going to be a huge deal for it, so it just made sense for me to be, like, a bigger part than just design.
Mm-hmm. And then it was like, yeah, and then it kind of just, it kind of came true that, you know.
Yeah.
So you brought Ruby in and just kind of started working on Wanderhome. But what were the kind of steps that you took from the idea of this game to deciding that it was going to turn into a Kickstarter and that you were going to pull in just this massive group of artists and writers?
So the way it kind of went was, you know, you start with kind of the structure of the text, like enough of the text to feel like you've got a good handle on what the game is, like, you know, the minimum required document. And I've got that, and I kind of spent some time being like, what would I visually want this to be? Because I'm a very visual person. And what was like kind of the aesthetic touchstones? And then the next step was looping you in, mm-hmm. and basically pitching it to you and mm-hmm. getting you to be on the same page.
Yeah.
Because like, and at first we weren't on the same page.
Like, yeah, there's a training wheel stage where I was like, it's Frog and Toad. And you were like, no,
it's not Frog and Toad.
It's only kind of Frog and Toad.
I learned from that training stage, I think, how to just be like, you're wrong.
Yes.
Before we like worked together much, I didn't quite know how to be like, you're incorrect about this thing.
Yeah.
But I figured that out. Once Grub was on the same page, then it was like figuring out the artists, getting, you know, like getting them on board, lots and lots of cold calls.
Yeah.
Building up an army. But like pretty much from the get-go, the idea with Wander Home was that we wanted to make something that had a wide variety of different art styles and perspectives in it.
Yeah.
As part of kind of the thesis of the game.
Yeah. And I mean, the reason it came out as a Kickstarter is just that's how this weird little industry works. Like,
yeah.
If you want to publish something and you're not like one of what, like three companies that do that,
mm-hmm.
you have to kickstart it.
Yeah. Especially at that point, you know, we didn't have, you know, like I think, you know, like, when I crunched the numbers, the bare minimum it was going to take to make Wander Home was going to be like 20,000 or like 18,000. Yeah. And it was like, I don't have that disposable income.
Absolutely not. Wander Home is about being lost for a home for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was like, you know, like, yeah, it was Kickstarter kind of became a necessity on that front. And when, like, I've done smaller projects that don't have Kickstarters, but for Wander Home, it was like, if we want to actually be able to have, like, a variety of artists doing colored art.
Yeah, you know? If we wanted it to be, like, as lush as it needed to be to tell what it is.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But it was very much like, this is what it needs to be.
Yep.
So what were some of those kind of preliminary items that you were budgeting for that you knew were going to be like something to just take into consideration? And then what were some items that you didn't budget for that you may have been like surprised about?
Yeah. I don't know. What's your basic budget? It's like you pay yourself a little bit. You pay an editor.
You pay the artist. You handle, you know, cover and interior. You've got graphic designer. You've got printing. We were going to do it from BackerKit from the beginning, so shipping was always going to be a separate convo.
Thank God.
Thank God. Yeah. Wander Home without a shipping budget would have been very scary.
So, so scary.
And then, you know, you leave aside a little pile just in case something goes wrong.
Which it always does.
And that kind of, and then, you know, like there's kind of like miscellaneous costs that like you factor into things like, you know, like, when we were originally first thinking about Wander Home, I thought that I was going to be shipping it out of my living room.
Yep.
Which now, saying that, seems completely ridiculous. Yep. But at the time, it was what I thought. So it was like, all right, we need to make sure you budget for packaging. And so those are always kind of factors that were known.
Or like, I don't know, they're miscellaneous expenses for anything. Like, we've had to purchase some, like, fonts or like all the book mock-ups are cost like $5 a pop or whatever.
The book mock-ups, there's like we just, there's 1,001 little tiny things that you can't anticipate until it shows up, and it's always different every project, I feel like. But with Wander Home, it was like, I think the biggest surprise for Wander Home to me was the scale. Like, as the scale increased, there were unexpected costs that emerged, I think, just in terms of, you know, like, do all this extra busy work around international shipping.
Oh, my God. The international shipping took, like, weeks off of Jay's life.
And it's still taking weeks off of my life.
True. Still happening.
Or it's like, you know, it's like when you're talking about merchandise, you know, if there's a difference between talking about, like, oh, well, you know, like, if Wander Home, if it turned out Wander Home was making, like, 50K, maybe we'd be talking
about merchandise. Maybe we'll do some t-shirts.
Yeah, maybe we'll do some prints as opposed to, you know, what we ended up having to do. So, like, it's like, once the scale becomes larger, you begin to develop additional costs. But also, you know, as the scale gets larger, there's like some things that kind of just like,
there's more leeway also.
Yeah, there's more leeway. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right now, so like our initial merch idea, if we made more than expected, we were going to do like some hand done screen prints of, we were going to do like a shirt and a scroll, right? Maybe not even a shirt.
We didn't have a scroll plan either.
Oh, God.
I don't even remember I don't think we had original merch ideas. I don't even remember.
I think there's like merch built into some of the tiers, the backer tiers.
Oh yeah, there was like, yeah, there was those things. Yeah, like the pilgrim tier had like the backpack.
But like now I'm like always in contact with 4 different production companies about logo printed products and like their mock-ups and their samples. And now I get like a monthly sample box for like things that I might want to print stuff for.
Yeah, it's like I think that once you're on a larger scale, it's weird because there are people who start paying attention to you who maybe weren't paying attention before.
Totally.
And there are people who like the process of negotiating rates and stuff becomes very different.
Yes.
Like when you're talking about a Kickstarter Wanderhome size, like a service like BackerKit's advertising platform becomes a very different conversation than when you're like if you're a Kickstarter of like 15K or something.
Yeah, like I love BackerKit's advertising program and it did us a lot of good. But when people ask me Kickstarter advice, I'm like, you should only think about it once you fund.
Yeah.
What else did we add on? There's so much art that we added on. The art budget at this point, because obviously the original Kickstarter goal was like 15 or 18K.
It was 18K, yeah.
And the art budget at this point is like $45,000 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like ballooned because we wanted to give all our artists a pay raise. That's really important to us.
Yeah. We had a few artists who we got extra pieces from.
Oh, yeah. A lot. Up until the end. We commissioned our last piece like 3 weeks ago from Nadir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Technically, yeah. Nadir and Joe, I think, were our last pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the art budget ballooned. And yeah, I think those are the big ones.
I think so too.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. How did you find all of your different artists?
Lots of hunting through Twitter tags. The DV art tag, the Drawing While Black tag, the Visible Women tag, basically just lots of different, like a lot of the tags artists will use for promotion. We did a lot of trawling through those.
Yeah.
We made a lot of lists and we sent out a lot of cold calls. Like there was a kind of a template of like, hey, artist,
here's our project.
Yeah, we love your work, especially this piece you did. You know, this is the rate we're talking about with this is the stretch goal. You know, like this is what we'd be looking at. Like, are you interested? Please let us know. And
got ghosted a lot.
We got ghosted a lot. There were a lot of artists who just didn't reply. There were a lot of artists who like replied and then never replied again.
A lot of people who had to turn us down because they were busy.
There was a couple artists who said yes, and then when it was like, all right, sign this contract, and they ghosted us.
Yeah.
There was one artist who was entirely gung ho, but they're like, they had to like get out of their contract with their agent, and it was like a whole little thing.
I know. I see their work now on Instagram, and I'm like, oh, we could have had that if the timing was just a little different.
It's all right. We'll hire them.
I know.
Anyway, but like I think we probably contacted somewhere around 60 artists to get down to the list that we got to.
Yeah, I feel that honestly. Even just with trying to find people to talk to, it's like.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah,
totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like anytime you're doing something that requires like just a critical mass of talented people to do a thing, there's just so much cold calling and so many rejections or ghostings, and it's just like you just gotta be like that's part of the
just roll with it.
And the honestly, the kind of nice part is that like if they say no, like, or if they ghost you, you can just contact them again next time.
Totally.
There are
especially like when you matter.
Yeah, there's a few artists, there's a couple artists who ignored us when we were putting Wanderhome together, and then after Wanderhome we're like,
are now
hey,
on our radar,
like hey, if you ever want to work on a project. And it's like very interesting.
It's totally great though.
I don't mind that.
Yeah, no, I would ignore me too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
No, I don't want to work on your tiny little project.
Yeah.
My rate is really high.
Did you have all of the stretch goals planned out from the beginning, or did Wanderhome kind of just explode like further than you would have expected?
Wanderhome exploded.
I think we had stretch goals planned out to like $60,000.
Yes.
Which we made in the first day. Mm-hmm. So there were like 2 weeks where we were like, number one, what stretch goals should we add? And number two, how do we implement them? Like, how can we contact and like source all this stuff and price it out? Mm-hmm. That was like a real hustle during the Kickstarter.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think when we run another one, we are never going to link certain stretch goals to certain numbers ahead of time again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like we had so much cool stuff in the wings that like people would have been excited about.
Yeah.
That we just lowballed.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I think definitely for our next project. I mean, we learned a lot of lessons from Wanderhome, but I think definitely one of them is just that, you know, like figure out the trajectory of the project before we start, you know,
like pinning down certain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean like some of the extra merch?
Yeah. Even just like, you know, like artists doing extra art or like writers contributing, like, you know, like you know, it's a bad spot when it's like you've got like a writer where it's like, oh, yeah, you know, this person will be writing for us if we make this much money. And then like when they wake up the day the project is launched and the project's made that much money.
Yeah. Like then, I mean, the point of a stretch goal is to excite people and to like try and make goal oriented stuff so people share it. It's an advertising thing.
Yeah.
And
when you
hit the goal without using that advertising thrust, like,
yeah, then it's part of your base project.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. And that's definitely something that I hadn't really thought about before.
Oh, yeah. Anytime I see people launch a Kickstarter with, like, here are our stretch goals and don't pin them to numbers, I'm like, I growl with jealousy a little bit.
Hey, look, we've learned.
We've learned. We did great. We're learning.
Why, like, is there anything in particular that you think really helped you hit so much on that first day?
Okay, there are a couple factors.
Yeah. So I think, to me, the big ones are that there was a pretty substantial pre-Kickstarter push.
Mm-hmm.
We had 750 people following the project before it launched, which is pretty huge by indie RPG standards. We had, like, promotion geared up. Like, we had, like, folks, you know, they knew what day the project was launching. We had folks in the wings ready to, like, retweet it.
Post about it, yep.
Yeah. We had, I think, you know, like, part of it was cultural. We had the zeitgeist right moment. Part of it is that Matt Mercer retweeted us in the early afternoon.
Totally. That was great.
That
40 felt minutes. Great.
Yeah, that was an amazing. Yeah, exactly.
I do think Wonder Home hit at exactly the right time. Like, it was midsummer during the pandemic. So people, like, wanted that, like, idyllic whatever, and they didn't have it.
Yeah, exactly.
And we were like, we will provide it to you. People talk a lot about the Matt Mercer retweet as though he's never retweeted anyone else before. But I think it's just because it was, like, in the middle of, like, a global depression wave.
Yeah, and I think that it was, like, especially, like, the feeling of summer feeling like a very false summer, like you're not getting what you actually want from it.
Yeah.
And like a game that is like,
we will give you exactly the feeling that you want from like a beautiful sunny day in nature with your friends.
Yeah. A world that has the capacity to heal from what is happening to it.
I think
was very resonant.
Also true.
And I think that kind of was just, you know, the good art, everything being lined up well, I think just going into it with a lot of kind of like confidence and like, I don't know, just like professionalism, like just everything looked really clean, which was, I think, a huge help.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of art done. If you actually look back on the very original Kickstarter page, the only done artwork is a couple of the playbook designs and the cover art.
Yep.
But we were able to use artists' previous work to like make it clear that we had a bunch of talented folks
we did
on
do
the
that.
Project. Yeah. And like we were able to like communicate what the vibe would be like without.
Yeah, we had some like sample pages and some sample my floral ornaments or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like even though we didn't have all the art yet because we're running a Kickstarter to afford art.
Yes.
Like we still had the vibe pretty much down.
And we also had the play kit, which I think was a huge help.
Yeah. I love the play kit.
Yeah, having a document that gives people a good vibe for what the game is like was really useful considering how many people have never encountered a game like it before.
Yeah, very
strange. And being able to point at that document, and if they still don't get it, having interviews and play tests. And
yeah, did we have an actual play at that point?
Mm-hmm.
I think even today, like, some people have backed Wonder Home, have the PDF in their hands today, and are still like, how does this game actually work? How do you actually play it?
You say you think, like, we haven't gotten three of those emails today.
Yeah, we have. And it's really great to not have to be like, well, if you think about the actual way that role-playing games work, do you need X, Y, and Z? Instead, I can just be like, can you watch Brennan be funny and play our game and you'll like it?
Yeah, exactly.
I honestly have that PDF sitting in my inbox right now, and I have to tell y'all how insanely hard it was to not open that document, because I knew if I started reading that before I started talking to you that, one, I would be late, and two, that's all I would ask you about.
Yeah. Some people in our Discord are like, they're talking about like, oh, I'm in class now, but I opened the Wander Home PDF, so I'm no longer in class.
One person was like, I was in a Zoom call and then I started crying.
And so I had to turn my camera off.
Yeah. So if you're wondering what I'm going to do after this interview, it is just going to be curl up on the couch and read that.
Great. It's really good. It's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of it.
I think it's pretty good.
I think it's decent.
I think it's okay.
It's no dialect, but right, Grumpy thinks it's okay.
Nothing can be dialect ever, but you know, this one's fine. I just went down to the creek to like decompress and get off Twitter for 5 goddamn seconds, and I was like looking out at the sparkling water, and I was like, I have released my biggest the biggest project of my entire life, which like, it's going to get bigger and we're going to do more great stuff. And I'm like very proud of us and are excited for our future. But I was like, oh, this is like a monumental situation for me. And I'm just going to vibe with the river for a while. The creek, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Don't misgender her.
So the day that the Kickstarter ended, what did you do?
Oh my God. I went to work. I had a day job as a receptionist. That's right.
You had a day
job. Oh my God. We ended on like a Thursday.
Yeah, we did. We did. We ended on Thursday, September 3rd. I was so dead at that point. Emotionally, I was like a carved out husk of a person.
We were extremely run ragged.
Yeah.
You'd been doing like international shipping data.
Yes.
You had that spreadsheet of like every shipping cost across the entire world.
That's what I had. Yeah. I had that. And I think genuinely the Kickstarter ended. I did a post about it. I finished up the last few emails and meetings with our international shipper. And then I know that weekend you came over.
I came upstate for the feast.
Yeah. You came upstate and we had a little feast. But besides that, I think I remember just taking a vacation from social media for like 2 weeks.
It was pretty hard for you.
It was really difficult. It was because it was a vacation from social media and from writing games.
And those are pretty much your two hobbies.
Those are the only two things
I do. It's before we were all into Among Us.
I was going to say, yeah, now I've got Among Us, so I would have been fine. But at that time, it really destroyed me.
Will you tell that story about why people throw feasts?
Oh, yeah. Feasts, historically, the function of a feast, like within our culture, or like within, sorry, like among humans, is, so I guess according to some scientists, the purpose of like giving, when someone returns home after like a very difficult travel and they've been like starving themselves in order to make that long voyage, the purpose of the feast is to like nurse them back into normality and basically like offset kind of all of that pain and heaviness.
The like starvation mode that comes from like a
constant harrowing travel.
Yeah.
And I think I told you that and you cried.
Yeah. Cause I was like, oh, Wander Home is, I just want to throw like a beautiful vegan feast outdoors. And Jay was like, well, you want to throw a feast because your body is broken. And I was like, what? I just think it would be cute. And she was like, no, dude. Like, you have been suffering for a month, like, overworking yourself and whatever. Anyway, it was lovely. I searched the entire Hudson Valley for mead because I thought it would be thematic. Mm-hmm. And I've moved up here since to work on the game, and I just found out they sell it at, like, my parents' local liquor store. So stupid. Mm-hmm. It took so long.
That feast was the best part of the Kickstarter.
I also have a soft spot for the day it launched, and I drove back to Philly in a hurricane.
That's true.
And Roy and Kaylee were just talking the whole time, and every 15 minutes I would tell them a large number. And they'd be like, good for you, Grub. And then I'd go back to Twitter, and they'd go back to talking. And then the 4 weeks in between, I have very few memories.
Yes.
Yeah, all of the adrenaline surge, I bet.
Yes. Yep. Oh, for sure. I think maybe the most challenging part about Kickstarter is that when you're running a traditional business, you get to do this great thing. Like if you're a AAA company or like D&D or something, you get to spend years making the project, finalizing it, getting all the art together. Mm-hmm. And then Once that's all done and the project has a neat little bow on it, you run a marketing campaign for it. Yeah.
Then you tell people about your beautiful, perfect, extant thing.
Yeah. Whereas Kickstarter is the opposite. You have to come up with just enough of a thing that you think people are willing to spend money on it. And then you have to, like, snake oil salesman your way to everyone you know, wheedle them to get them to promote you.
Yep.
And then gather that together to get the funds enough to make your vision a reality.
And then when you have the funds, it's just a second race to get it done as soon as possible because, like,
the backers will start being bizarre at you.
Yeah, the premise of Kickstarter is, like, you make the thing and then the people have the money to do the thing. But people really don't understand it. They think it's a sales platform.
Yeah.
Like, month one after the Kickstarter closed, people are like, I'm sorry, did I miss something? I didn't get my physical copy. And I was like, dude, I've been asleep the whole time. No, of course you don't.
Yeah, there are people who are like, why is the PDF? They're like, literally in October, there are people who are like, why is the PDF not already released?
Like, and it's like, I don't have it. It doesn't exist.
The PDF has not been made yet. That's the whole point of this exchange.
I promise you, when it's done, I will hand it to you really fast.
We did.
So other than certain people not understanding that it takes a little bit of time, what was the stuff? Like, what did you, once you had a time to kind of rest and realize that this was actually happening, what all have y'all been up to?
Oh, God. Like, the process since October?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well,
so part of it has been establishing our company. I think that anything we talk about with Wander Home has to be, like, understood that we got the money from Kickstarter and we were like, well, we can't treat this the way we were treating it before, which is that
it can't all go into Wander Home, because if we tried to spend all the money we got, we would fail.
Yeah, we just would not, there's not,
it's impossible.
You cannot, yeah.
We've made the most luxurious book we can think of, and it,
yeah.
We haven't used all the money.
Yeah. So we were like, all right, we need to, and we also need to structure this differently, because it was like, it was a sole proprietorship, mm-hmm. and it was all going into a business account that was right next to my check. It was like, it was going to like a business checking account.
Yeah.
It was right next to my checking account. And I just, if I needed to like pay myself or just transfer money from one to the other. And it was just tax wise. It was like, it was just not
horrifying.
It was just not up to snuff. So we spent a lot of the time, in addition to working on Wander Home, also,
like, setting up a proper business and making it, like, sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Doing all the, like, you know, like, all right, we have an accountant. We have, you know, we're all registered. We've got all our paperwork in order. We've got, you know, we have a home office with furniture and, you know,
we have all that stuff. Like, our online storefront is linked to a shipping platform that will send people their stuff if they buy it from us. Because backer kit doesn't last forever, although we wish it would.
We wish it would. I wish I could just use BackerKit for
all fulfillment. I know.
Yeah, they're so much better at it than some platforms that we might or might not work with.
Yeah, so I would say all of October.
All of October was that. And also, it was also, because the thing is, crucially, like, a lot of Wander Home's development is, there's a point where if the text of the game is done, which ideally it is when you go to Kickstarter, is the text of the game is done.
Which, I think it was.
It was, yeah, it was. I think I wrote a couple
another
little bits
chapter,
since then.
Yeah,
like, a little bit since then, but, like, besides that, it was basically done. That means that in the few months after the Kickstarter, there's this really long lag period where what is happening is that I am waiting for my editor to give me Wander Home back, you know, the edited version of Wander Home. And
your several editors.
Yeah, my several editors, yeah, because first it goes through, you know, one through one, and one through another.
And I'm wrangling.
You're wrangling artists. 15
artists.
You're wrangling artists, yeah. And so what you're left with is that we're both, a lot of what the first few months after the Kickstarter was administrative of me doing editorial revisions while you wrangle artists and
write up contracts and
produce
merchandise. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then, once that was all squared away by, I think, like, what, like, when did you start doing the graphic design?
I started the graphic design February 4th.
February 4th,
because
yes.
The editing was done in January.
That's right. Yeah.
And then I read the full game for the first time in January.
So, like, by February, you know, boom, you know, like, we are actually doing the layout work, and, you know, that takes time, and then furthermore, like, we are just also a business, so there's, like, other things going on.
Yeah, still running. We answer emails from individual customers every day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we do, you know, we've got other projects that we're helping support in various ways. You know, we have, there's a lot of little, like, administrative stuff going on even beyond Wander Home. And so, but it was like, we were able to get, you know, it took a few months, but we got the graphic design together, and then after that, you know, once the graphic design is squared away for the book, but then also for the character sheets and all the merchandise mm-hmm. and everything, it all goes to various printers. It gets collected at warehouses. It gets shipped out from those warehouses.
Yeah.
And then after stretch goals, it's done.
Yeah. So today we're at PDF release. Next week, I'm going to get the final edition to the printer, mm-hmm. probably, or the week yeah. after, or the week after that, because mm-hmm. we live in hell.
Hopefully soon, yeah. But yeah.
And then almost all of our merch has arrived at the warehouse. We're still waiting on the screen printed stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be fully out of our hands and yeah. up to the U.S. mail system, which, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's kind of this horrible feeling of, like, that we're very familiar with from running so much stuff, like, as LARPs, where it's the LARP you write is in the hands of 60 children mm-hmm. and a team of production staff. Mm-hmm. And so for us, the kind of feeling of, like, we are at the nucleus of a thing that is so much bigger.
Beyond us and out of our control.
And, like, that's okay on a certain level. Like, we're kind of, we are not, we're control freaks, but we also understand the limitations of our control freakishness.
Yeah.
And
people, that anytime, is a huge help. Anytime I run a LARP, people are always like, oh, you're so chill about, like, how things go. And I was like, it's because before I came to camp, I've had every thought I could possibly have about running this, and I wrote it down and communicated it to other people. So, like, I was a control freak, and now I reached the end of the limitations of control, and that's fine. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's nothing we can do.
Yep.
Was there anything that surprised you about the process of setting up Awesome Crate Games as a, like, legitimate business?
Corporate tax law in the U.S. is messed up.
We still don't understand sales tax. Genuinely, we still don't.
I think I got it figured out at this point. But there's a solid few months there where I'm like, I'm not sure. Yeah, corporate tax law is messed up. There is so much of a business that is administrative, and it's all, there is absolutely no
support structure.
And then, like, there is support structure, but it's all trying to make money off of you.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna have the support structure, you got to be picky. Mm-hmm. But two people is not enough to run a business, but so we are sure able to run 80% of a business.
So true.
between the two of us, we are successfully running almost all of Possum Creek Games, and the rest of it, we are juggling very quickly.
So very
fast. The illusion that it's being done also.
They're only up in the air for a little while.
Yeah, exactly. Our accountant's never waiting too long. Yeah, I feel like,
like, how few yeah. rules there are.
How many rules. Yeah, exactly. Like learning that contract. In my head, I'd always assumed contracts were, like, some kind of ancient rune magic in which, like, each paragraph is a symbol that must be, like, slotted very perfectly together. And learning that you, I don't know, just watching you put together contracts was just like, oh, I thought that was cheating. But then, like, it is that way, but it's not that way. And it's just like,
yeah, someday we'll hire a lawyer, but right now, it's just me, like, picking apart legalese with my little brain and putting it back together in the uh-huh, ways I want.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that's the core of it.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So, Ruby, did you have a background in any of this kind of more administrative stuff?
Okay, so I've had many graphic design jobs that are just me alone in one department. Like, I'm the only person in my department, which inevitably makes you do all the admin work. I lived in LA for a couple years, and my last job there was basically people would email me things, and I would either design those things and print them out or just print them out. But then there was, like, the whole operational apparatus of, like, getting the boxes with which to mail them and then having a mail company that picked it up every day at 5 p.m., et cetera, et cetera. And, like, keeping ink in stock or whatever. And then my last job, which I quit after the Kickstarter, I was, like, a receptionist and office administrator at an acupuncturist. So I have a little of this background, but not in any real way, just out of, like, having had to learn it before.
Yeah. I feel like being gen, I'm a Zoomer, you're a millennial, but,
so,
like,
true.
The advantage of being younger generation folks in general is just that we have to adapt very quickly.
Yeah, you kind of always have to know how to do it. Like, I've been a freelancer for a long time, so I have written my own ass contracts before. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Invoiced people or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, like, ugh. Similarly, like, I've done, there was a lot I had to learn, like, before Grubby came on with, I kind of learned a lot of the basics in between Sleepaway and Wander Home.
Well, yeah, you were running Possum Creek Games fledgling version out of the front room of your house.
Yeah, exactly.
And like trying to go to the post office as often as you could.
Yeah, precisely. Which was not that often.
Weren't you just fulfilling orders like through Itch? Like they would just email you and you'd crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
So crazy.
Yeah. A pro tip just for everyone, never do physical fulfillment through Itch. I love itch.io very dearly. It is very bad at making sure people give you their addresses.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst feeling in the world is having to send an email to 20 people being like, hey, you did not give me your address.
For the physical thing you ordered to your house.
So I have an envelope with it. It's packed away. I send me your address and I will add it here. And then half of them don't. And one person emails you 3 months later, like, where is it? Where's my...
It's right here. It's on my desk still.
It's like, I have it.
Well, actually, I did kind of want to talk to you about Itch. So I know that this was mostly from before the days of Wander Home, but yeah, how did you first get into using Itch? I guess you have some mixed feelings on your experience with it, but...
Well, Itch is really good at the thing that it's intended to do, which is that Itch is a... First and foremost, it is a video game selling platform. And because of that, it is incredibly good at digital distribution. It's way better at it than anything else, I think, competing with it, especially as a drive-through RPG. Itch is kind of the premier. If you are trying to distribute digital files to people, Itch has a bunch of features you need, a bunch of features you didn't realize you need. And like, it is, I think there's only like two things that Itch does not have that makes my life hard. But overwhelmingly, Itch is an incredibly elegant site. And like, I got into it at the start of 2019 when like kind of the Itch explosion was happening, when like a lot of RPG, like the folks in the indie games who are getting fed up with drive-through RPG structurally, who are getting kind of fed up operating under these, like, you know, without kind of a centralized way of distribution, found itch.io. And that was really great. And I've been among the folks kind of at the premiere of that, you know, like me as like Massive Press, Jammy, Takuma, Caro, just like, I don't know, like a lot of folks who have kind of been doing that work for a while now. I think that, I don't know, like I've definitely like both appreciated dearly the things that Itch is able to do and also definitely felt the spots that it's not been able to help me. But it, I would not be able to be a designer without Itch, I think.
Oh, yeah. We wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here at all. Yeah. Like, there'd be no way for me to distribute my games without Itch. Like, I wouldn't have been able to market Sleepaway in the first place. Like, what? I would have put up, like, a PDF on a Google Drive? Like, like what? Like, I tried to set up a drive-through RPG account, and I was so blown away by how opposite to what I was trying to do it was that I just gave up.
What do you mean by that?
Drive-thru RPG is structured assuming that you make very specific types of games. I think maybe the easiest way to explain what I mean by that is it has a tag for every single possible different trad system that your game might be a hack of, but it does not have a tag for queerness, for making queer games. Maybe that's changed in the past couple of years, but it, at least when I was attempting to get into it, it was very clear that it was built on the assumption that I was making more traditional games geared towards like that kind of audience with certain like production approaches in mind. And basically like what I was trying to do was I was, you know, I mean, a lot of it is courting a different audience than what drive-through RPG has, but also like the games I was making just didn't fit into the infrastructure they provided. And so itch.io, you know, when it's like when you're kind of sitting there, like, how do I distribute my games? And you're like trying to get things on drive-through RPG, but the platform seems frustrating. You know, you're a small creator, so Patreon doesn't feel capable. Itch.io, you know, when it's like, oh my God, in order to upload a game, I click a button that says upload a game. I drop in a PDF. I make some kind of like cover image and I can just hit publish and people can just start paying me for the game. And there's like a culture around like paying people well and tipping, and there's like a culture around hyping up games, and there's a lot of like Twitter to Itch back and forth, like, you know, communication and conversion. Itch just kind of was really structurally supportive, especially as a smaller designer.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Are y'all gonna continue to use that on future projects, or is it gonna be based off your own site now? Okay.
Everything we do is still on Itch, because Itch is, we use Squarespace for our own site, and there's things that Itch does that are just better than Squarespace.
Yeah, like we can't, yeah. It's really hard for us to send someone a download code.
Yeah.
If they buy a physical copy, which obviously they want the PDF immediately. Which
yeah, of course.
We know today.
Yeah. But like, yeah, like Itch makes it so easy to do things like that. Itch, there's so many like little features that Itch has that are like, you don't realize how amazing they are until you don't have them. Even just stuff like, oh, you can upload multiple files to itch.io and like just have a bunch of files in the same place. Itch.io, because it's like made for video games, is very okay with your PDF being huge.
Yeah.
Like if yeah. you upload a like 100 megabyte PDF, it's no questions asked.
I
it's
love
like
that.
Boom, thank you. You know, like same energy. Because like being built on video games, it lets you make really gorgeous storefronts, which is a small thing, but it's so
true.
Much fun. Itch.io, we are continuing to sell stuff on our website because it's important to have a website where people can go to
yeah,
get
like
the
a
PDFs.
Centralized place.
But to me, if you want to get my games, I think you should, if you want to get PDFs of my games, you should go to itch.io and get them there.
True.
And like, if you want physical copies, then you should be going to my website. But itch.io to me is kind of always the best spot to be for that.
The home base. Yeah. I mean, yeah. like Jamie converted her personal Itch account to the Possum Creek Games account at the beginning yeah. of the year
mm-hmm.
as like part of our onboarding.
Yeah. Yeah. And even then, like, I think itch.io still has a lot of stuff that, like, I don't want to put on my website. I don't want to put my, like...
Your small trauma zine.
Yeah, exactly. My, like, artsy-fartsy experimental stuff
yeah.
on my website. Because, like, I don't want people to be like, oh, what could I get that's similar to Wander Home? Oh, what's Games for the Broken? I'll check that out.
No, you should. you should only get Games for the Broken if you're deep in our Itch page and you send me an email to get one of our four copies out of the cardboard box.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So that's kind of like where I want it to be. And so Itch kind of is still, even as I move a lot of kind of my approach to game writing over to Patreon and like the way I write games into these fewer larger projects, Itch kind of still holds a lot of my smaller experimental stuff.
That's really cool. And I honestly, I feel like I am learning so much from you too right now.
Hell yeah.
Every time I'm like, the actual reason I'm doing this podcast is to learn from really cool people and just make friends. I mean, yeah, I'm
hell
totally
yeah,
adding
that's
value.
Why you yeah, do anything.
Is that not the point of podcasts?
It's so true.
Yes, it should be. It's like, oh yeah, it's totally for other people. No, it's for myself.
It's for you.
I've got one friend who is very open about the fact that the only reason they do podcasts is because they want to hang out with people for like, they're like, look, I just want to, I've got a lot of friends. I want to catch up with them for like an hour. You know, any particular friend I want to catch up with for like an hour once every few months. So I run a podcast and just, rotating around.
I want to jump back, though, to something that y'all mentioned earlier, which is, so outside of BackerKit, that if someone goes onto your website right now, then it gets fulfilled elsewhere. So you're no longer doing it from your house. So yeah. what's that logistic?
Whew. So we use EasyShip, where basically that's synced up to our website, and when we get an order, it's placed into EasyShip, and EasyShip sends it to their partner, which is a warehouse in Utah, that and ships it out. It's clunkier than I want it to be, and the crucial reason it's clunkier is because...
We
do a lot of pre-orders, and it's like it's definitely like a thing designed without kind of like pre-orders in mind.
Yeah, because
like
it's like
solutions to that.
We have a pallet at a warehouse somewhere with a couple copies of everything we have. Mm-hmm. And then when our Squarespace website gets an order, the program sends it to the warehouse. But if it doesn't have anything in the warehouse, the program gets really confused, which
Now it's okay. There was a rough training period or like yeah. where like it didn't the SKUs like for a pre-order, like the warehouse didn't have the pre-order SKUs because it wasn't an object they had at the warehouse yet.
Yeah.
And so we learned like, okay, we have to get the SKUs to the warehouse even
before
like months and months
as
before
soon
the
as
warehouse.
We take an order.
Yeah, exactly. Like months and months before the warehouse even is going to have the books, we just need to give them the SKUs. So like that was kind of a little like training curve, but we got there and it's mainly useful because neither of us have the physical capacity or emotional bandwidth to handle shipping
yep.
on any scale. And we needed to offload it. And is it more expensive? Yes. Is it more frustrating? Yes. But does it
Is it 100% necessary? Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's no world where I could be, like, Possum Creek Games does not even get that many orders a day, and yet there is still no world in which I could be the one packing things up into envelopes and sending them.
Literally, one of our artists is in Malaysia, and he was like, do any of my US-based friends want to buy me this thing and then send it to me because it doesn't ship to my country? And we were like, of course, we love you so much, we would do anything for you. And it took us like a month and a half to get to the post office to send him this thing because, like, it's just not how our brains work. Mm-hmm. It's just not how our bodies work, like, to get errands done.
No, I get that. I'm awful at going to the post office too.
Totally.
I always have to schedule a pickup, but they only do. I don't think they would pick up on the scale that you would need.
They actually, weirdly enough, they will. I've learned that because from Sleepaway, I scheduled a pickup for Sleepaway, all 400 books. But it's like, scheduling a pickup works fine if your printer has all its ink and you can then attach the thing.
And you have all the right labels with stickers.
And the problem that is for us is that, yes, if everything was in working order, I think it would be really easy for us to do that. But never is everything in working order, and therefore, the moment something breaks, we would never get it done.
Yeah.
And thus, it is just so much easier to tell someone else to do it and pay them to do it. And yeah, it's just, I don't think we could run our business.
Basically, anything that can't be done from a bed, Possum Creek Games cannot do.
Yeah, that is just true. Podcasters are lucky that we can have mics in bed, because if I had to sit in a chair to do an interview, no one would ever hear from me.
I sit in a chair to design Wander Home now, but it's like a lazy boy.
Yeah, and you also turned into a frog.
Yeah.
You went full Ponyo.
Yeah.
That is fair. I am definitely starting to convert to the work only from bed or couch life, and it is wonderful.
Everyone's coming around to our way of thought.
It's because of long COVID.
I know. Yeah, everyone has long COVID. Everyone is autoimmune now.
I was gonna say.
Yeah. And honestly, fulfillment just takes so much work, more work than most people realize. And
I mean, our like Wander Home Warehouse sent us the 41,000, like a picture of the 41,000 postcards we had sent to them last week. And it, like, I couldn't. There's no way.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no way. The amount of boxes that postcards are, I can't. I don't want to think about it. I hate to think about it. There's no way I could do it.
My ideal business model is that I get to feel like we're moving PDFs. That, like, I want to make everything like we're selling PDFs, even if we're
selling books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, outsourcing and, when possible, printing on demand are the best setups.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The problem with printing on demand is that we are sticklers about paper quality and ink quality things looking pretty. I think that if I didn't care, it would be fine. And if Grub didn't care, it'd be fine.
If I didn't care, I would not be here.
Yeah, exactly. So the problem with printing on demand is that it's like, I bet you we would... the closest we'll come to printing on demand is we do small print runs with Mixam, where we'll like print like 100 copies at a time.
Yeah.
But we could not live in a world where we did print on demand, just because I'm just a nut in that way.
We might print on demand merch later. Just like
merch is different. Merch is different.
Yeah.
Merch is not the game.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
No shade against printing on demand, by the way. I'm not saying that printing on demand is bad. I'm just saying, like, you know.
Just, like, as an aesthetic-based company.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, considering how much y'all put into the artwork and the layout and everything. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Need the complete control.
Yeah. Printing on demand could not, like, if you've seen any of the art for Wander Home, printing on demand could not make those pages look good. The ink would be inconsistent and splotchy.
Oh, like, I'm so scared to send this file to the printer.
We're already nervous working with a traditional print company. Like,
yeah.
I will do print on demand for black and white games. I feel like that's different. But like, if we're talking about color games, it's just a completely different story.
Yeah. So once you get past the point that it's approved from the printer, it's shipped out, you've completed the Kickstarter, do you have any plans for stocking Wander Home in, like, local game stores, or are you going to primarily keep it to just ordering from online?
Yeah, we want to stalk in places. A lot of that is going to be... A lot of what is going on between now and our next Kickstarter is I get to... My next big thing that I get to learn about is talking to Barnes & Noble and doing all that. And I think a lot of that is going to be like connecting with a distributor that already works with those sorts of stores. It was going to be an important part to me, is just in terms of like already having connections going in. We already have some wholesale connections. And I just like to like branch that out to local game stores and like that whole process. So that's the core of it.
Oh, that's exciting. I cannot wait until I'm just walking into a bookstore and I go like, oh, I know those people.
Really, really, the moment when I'm going to go completely Joker, like the moment when I'm just going to like, the moment I'm going to go like, I'm going to go full collapse is when I like go to a library and I see one of my games. If that ever happens to me, I think I'm done for. I think I'm gone.
Yeah.
I think you'll have to ship me off somewhere and, you know.
Fair enough.
You'll have to find a new game designer.
I will not.
I know. We'll simply leave.
I will leave. Yeah, we care a lot about physical books. We're like book people. So yeah, we want as much widespread distribution as we can get.
Mm-hmm. We're like book people just as, like, Grubby is more of a book person than a game person. I am equal parts book and game. I feel like maybe slightly more towards
the game. Oh, I just mean like, we both, like, care about the physical object.
No, I know. I just mean, like, it's the, like, we, like, you know, like, it's not, like, it's always, like, the physical object and its interest in that that is very motivating.
I just mean you showed me off those gilded end papers you found, and that is not normal.
No, it's definitely not. It's definitely not.
Looking back over everything from just, you know, starting Wander Home, putting it on the Kickstarter, and everything that you've gone through and building Possum Creek Games. Gonna ask a question that might be a little hard, but what would you say has been like the most challenging part of all of it?
Ugh. Honestly, like for me at least, I'm disabled. Grub is disabled. We're in a pandemic. It's emotionally exhausting. It's physically exhausting. We push ourselves to our limits, accomplishing the same amount of work that an able-bodied person can, like, accomplish on, like, a kind of chill week.
Yeah, like, last week, remember, I proudly told you that I calculated and I work 4 days a week, and you were like, whoa.
Yeah. We, in order to run Possum Creek Games, we have to rely, like, we have to count on... time-wise, quality being more important than quantity.
Yeah.
And that is just exhausting. That is just, on a purely logistical, emotional level, that is, I think, the most challenging part, is that it is incredibly difficult to do all this while also... Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the kind of, like, it's just there's a lot that goes into it, and it is tough to match all of that.
Yeah.
And that is, I don't know, for me, the most challenging part, that, like, if you're like, what is the one thing that keeps you, that would keep you from doing this forever?
My body.
It would be my body. Yeah. It'd be like, I could creatively match this
forever.
Yeah. The question is like, if I ever like double stack two Kickstarters too close to each other, and then all my bones break.
Yeah.
Like then oops, you know, like the moment there's a deadline, I'm screwed. Right. Like, it's like, all right, well, we just have to
the amount of like self-care apparatus we've built around this company. We both have like wrist braces and compression gloves now, and like a whole host of painkillers and stuff.
Yeah, we've just like, in order to run this company, we've just had to go full, like, any internalized ableism I had just had to get like washed out.
Yeah,
because it was, I could not do this job and try to pretend to be an able-bodied person.
True.
If I like was like, I need to have a desk and I need to have a monitor that
I need to start working in the morning and stop working in the evening.
Yeah, it's like I need to hold myself to a consistent schedule, and if I don't, you know, like, I have to work during those times.
It wouldn't happen.
So I think that is, I mean, to be fair, it's, I think, one of our greatest strengths is that we are able to be really accommodating with ourselves, and I think that it leads to us doing better work than people who are just kind of.
And also being accommodating with each other. Like, sometimes I'll come over and like clean your house because I'm feeling good, or like a lot of us hanging out and like talking in friendship time is, to me, like work.
Yeah.
Like that counts
for sure.
As work and like healing for us.
Yeah, exactly.
And also to be able to be like, Jamie's technically my boss. So she'll be like, can you have this horrendous business thing done by the end of the week, and I'll be like, nope.
And I'll be like, yeah, no, that's fine.
I will be asleep this week.
And I'll be like, that's totally fine. And yeah. Like being able to kind of set those things, I think, is our greatest strength, but is also, I think, the most challenging part about running this thing.
Totally.
In my opinion.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you talk about that, and it's like, I've also had a disability for my whole life that's been very manageable, and then recently got diagnosed with one that is not so manageable. And so just
ain't that the way?
Yeah. And, you know, so it's like, oh, I feel like I'm having to just completely relearn how to do everything, how to function, how to even sit in a chair long enough to record a podcast.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think so much of it also is like when you're trying to play, like, I remember, like, throughout my entire life, I was always, like even, I think, a really simple example that's kept coming up in this podcast is I would always have a desk, and I would never sit at it. And I'd have, like, the desk in the corner of the room, and it would get covered in garbage, and I'd never use it. And I keep kind of giving myself shit, because it was like, why am I not doing work the way I'm supposed to be doing? And I'd try to, and I'd never be able to do work that way. For some reason, I just felt uncomfortable sitting like that for an extended period of time. And so with this office, it was like, I'm not getting myself a desk, I'm getting myself a futon. And I'm going to acknowledge the fact that I cannot work the way other people work. And instead of trying to change the way I work,
I will adapt my environment.
Yeah, I will just reshape my environment. And that was huge. You know, I think that was really important. And I don't think that Possum Creek, I could do the work I do if I wasn't able to be chill with myself. And also, I think just be forgiving, you know, yeah. Just like the days where it's like, I can't do shit today. You can't do shit today. These are off days,
yep.
Or off weeks, you know.
Okay, I literally now I'm like, can we do a sequel episode where we just talk about tips for like how to get through it?
Genuinely, that's the thing people should talk about. I would actually love that.
I would for sure subscribe to the Disability Tips and Tricks podcast.
how to be a girl boss while unable to walk more than like 50 feet.
Okay, yeah. But like I'm 100% serious.
Yeah, no, I'd love to do a sequel to this. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Sweet. Okay. Anyway, so we've talked about challenges. I like to follow that up with, you know, again, looking back through everything and just how everything has just changed so much for y'all with this Kickstarter and this game and this business. Like, what has been the most rewarding part of all of it?
You gonna say something gay?
I'm gonna say something fucking gay.
Say it.
I mean, look, like, I was working on Sleepaway, my first Kickstarter, when I was homeless. Like, I was literally couch surfing. I got the cover for Sleepaway by, like, negotiating a bargain, effectively, where it was like, hey, if the Kickstarter funds, I'll pay you for the cover. If the Kickstarter doesn't fund,
I'll figure it out in the next decade.
Yeah, I'll die, I guess. And then going from that to the point where with Wander Home, I have a house. I am able to take care of the people I care about. And then I think furthermore that I've been able to get really close with Grub, and that like the two of us have built something really special and created a ton of incredible art together. And that the stuff I do would not work without her work. That mm-hmm. Sleepaway is what it is because of her. That everything I make is what it is because of her. When I work without her, I feel like I'm missing half my brain. I feel like I'm torturing her right now. And yeah, I think that the most rewarding part is getting to work alongside her and create things with her and make something really special out here by the creek. What about you, Grubby? What's your most rewarding part?
Fuck you. Die. She's right. The most rewarding part is this very good thing we've created that we're really proud of.
Yeah.
And that we like doing.
Also, there was a moment during the Kickstarter when a therapist messaged me, and she works with rural queer teens in rural Idaho, and she was like, I think that your game has the capacity to transform people's lives, and I want to use it as a tool in therapy. Do you have any advice? And that was really a very, like, oh, cool, like, this work outlives
me. It matters.
Like, yeah, like, if we got our start in LARP, where we got so used to making things that would never matter again.
Like, and so ephemeral. The children barely remember it.
Yeah. And now being at the point where we can make something where it feels like not to be conceited, but I'd like to think that there's the possibility that Wanderhome
might matter.
Might matter that, like, even if one kid finds Wanderhome and that changes something for them, that's huge, right? Yep. And like the fact that we just have that capacity extending out into the future, and that's a permanent change in the world, is,
yeah,
I think, new for both of us.
Yeah. When I was in college, I was really depressed, and so I was really into, I honestly was so depressed, I don't remember what art movement I'm referencing, but Mary Lum told me about an artist who would only make art for one person. He would, like, make an art piece and send it in a letter to one person.
When I was depressed, I was also really into that art movement, and I also can't remember what it was called.
Yeah, we're the worst.
Yeah.
Anyway, now, like, that mattered to me, because I was like, okay, if I make, like, a garbage little piece of art that matters to one person, that will be worth it. And now I can make a garbage little piece of art that matters to one person who is also 7,000 people. Like, it yeah. doesn't change just because the scale is bigger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, y'all, like, you're making me cry right now.
I'm crying. I'm you're not crying, Jamie.
That's because I got 3 hours of sleep last night.
I'll get you someday.
You'll get, it's, yeah.
All right. So to kind of wind things down, which I really don't want to do, but I've already gone over what I told you we were going to do, but sure. I just want to keep talking forever. You've mentioned a little bit about the next Kickstarter. You, for whatever you're willing to share at this point, like, what's the next project?
Okay. Let me pitch it, because Jamie's bad at pitching it. It's her game and I haven't read it yet, but it's like, if Jay Dragon wrote Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends.
All right, let me pitch it. Let me pitch it, because Grumpy hasn't read it yet. And so,
but I'm right.
You are 100% right. It's called Yaseba's Bed and Breakfast. It is a sweet slice of life RPG about a magical bed and breakfast up in kind of the rural America that's about, you know, full of misfits and about trying to, you know, make a home among...
It's about a witch who sold her heart so that she could house queer children.
Yes. And it's big.
It's enormous. It's sprawling. It's modular. People in our Discord were talking today about how they're excited to collect all the achievements and stickers and expansions.
Yeah.
Which are built in.
Mm-hmm.
It's episodic.
Yep. There's a frog that cooks.
There's a frog chef. There's a demon child.
Yep. There's
a robot maid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like...
It's a fun RPG.
Mm-hmm.
It's more constrained than Wanderhome, for sure. It has, like, rules and characters.
Well, I wouldn't say it has rules, but it definitely has characters.
Crazy.
That was a joke. That was a joke. For all the listeners out there,
there I'm are joking. Rules.
Please buy the game. Please do that.
It's supposed to be, like, it's supposed to have the vibe, we're all about vibes here at Possum Creek, it's supposed to have the vibe of, like, your favorite children's book or cartoon that you can't really remember from your childhood, except for all the parts that you made up in your brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We have been pouring through, or we soon will be pouring through, a bunch of children's books from when we were kids,
mm-hmm.
to figure out the precise, like, aesthetic, but we've got a concept artist, and we've got a writing team. And hopefully, barring any delays or anything like that, we want to launch the Kickstarter September 15th. So stay tuned and you'll be hearing a lot more about it.
I am so excited.
I'm really sorry about it. I've been playtesting it, and it's a game, it's episodic, and like each chapter is like an hour-long little mini scenario within Yaseba's Bed and Breakfast. And it's so nice to have a game that you can pick up and teach people and play all in the span of like an hour.
Yep.
Like, you can just play Yaseba's and be like, well, that was good, and we're done, and we're set, and, like, in the span of an hour, and you don't feel like you've created something you'll never visit again, because it's all contained within Yaseba's.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to play. It's been kind of, like, my big... I've been working on it since before Wanderhome, and so it's like, Wanderhome was like my
Wanderhome's
little thing.
Wanderhome's like, a freak accident in how fast it came together.
Yeah, well, Wanderhome was like the, like, well, like, I need to take a weekend off from working on Yaseba's, so maybe I'll try this.
this little thing.
Yeah, this little thing. So Yaseba's is great, and yeah, there's already a first look on our Patreon.
There'll be an ash can out sometime in...
June, July?
Yeah.
All right, well, definitely excited about learning just more about that. Honestly, whatever y'all make, I'm backing. Like,
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, where can people find you?
You can find us at possumcreekgames.com. You can check out our itch page at possumcreekgames.itch.io. You can find me. I'm jdragsky on Twitter. I'm the only jdragon on Twitter. Please, literally, if you search up jdragon, there's like maybe a couple furries down at the bottom of the list. But like, search up jdragon, I'm the only one that comes up. And yeah, that's where I am. And Patreon is Possum Creek.
Yep. The Patreon's good. Once you go to the Patreon, you can get access to our Discord.
Yep, we hang out there all the time.
We hang out there. We do work. I live stream designing stuff.
Yep, Jamie, you call me names.
I call you names. I make fun of people. I'm on Twitter at RubyLavin, and our business account is Possum_Creek.
Mm-hmm. We're all over the place.
I will definitely put all of those links in the show notes, but thank you both so much for coming and chatting with me today.
Yeah, it's been great.
It's been so fun.
It's a good reflection hour for our big release day.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
To have thoughts that aren't just like buzzing.
Yeah, yeah. To open up our skulls and let the bees out for an hour.
Well, I hope that you get to go and rest. Put down all of the work. Just go rest and enjoy and have fun.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Fair the fuck enough.
Thank you so much. It's great.
Thank you. This has been wonderful.
That's it for today's episode of Role Play Grow. To check out the show notes, you can go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. To keep up with every episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave me a review. Reviews are one of the best ways to help a newer podcast get up off the ground. To follow me on Twitter, you can either find me at LightheartADV for our business account, or at KetraWCR to see me tweet about other things like my dog and World of Warcraft. You can also find us as Lightheart Adventures on both Instagram and Patreon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week on Role Play Grow.